It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. And as always, I make a pitch. Join us during the week. Fox Business Network. The name of the show is Kudlow. 4 to 5 p.m. every day. All folks are welcome. And we're going to do some stock market work. We got Mike Ozanian of Forbes Magazine and the S Network. And we have Jim LeCamp of Morgan Stanley. So welcome, folks. I'm broadcasting from an undisclosed location in West Palm Beach, Florida. Not really sure what's going on. Half exhausted from a couple days down here. But it's interesting. Stock market going sideways. Interest rates, market rates coming down. But I want to raise this point. You know, you've got an inverted curve, gentlemen. The classic New York Fed, T-bill versus 10-year. That was the Fed model. If that inverts, you got a recession within a year. All right. The T-bill is at 423. The 10-year is down to 383. It got as high as, I don't know, 4.25, maybe even higher than 4.25. I just find this very interesting. The Fed's going to continue to tighten, maybe not 75, maybe they'll do 50 in December, but they're still going to be tightening policy. The M2 money supply is crashing. It was up 30% by the early part of 2021. It's now flat or slightly negative in growth. It's contracting, in other words. So I want to try to figure all this out. Mike Ozanian, I know you watch the M2 money supply. Few people do nowadays. I give it a look. I'm not the monetarist that I was 30 or 40 years ago. But you can't ignore that, and you've got an inverted curve. So what does this tell you?
I think we're going to have a recession probably first quarter 2023, Larry. I think what you're seeing in the money supply is leading into what you're seeing in, I guess we call it core GDP, personal consumption, business investment, and home building. Mm-hmm. So it's last quarter, just a 0.1% pace versus the traditional GDP of 2.6% annual rate. So I think it's leading there. And I think, for lack of a better term, the easy work on inflation's kind of been done already, but to get it below, you know, anything close to 2% is going to be much harder, which is why, you know, you're seeing what's happening with M2. And we just got a very bad report from IBIS, which tracks earnings estimates, and it's saying for the first time in 2 years, they're predicting fourth quarter earnings to decline.
Oh, so, wait a second. I had not seen this. Tell us more about this, because profits are the mother's milk of stocks, but profits are the lifeblood of the economy. You're not going to grow the economy if profits are shrinking, right? Businesses are going to have to lay off, et cetera, et cetera. Tell us more about IBIS.
IBIS is saying that not only that, but they're saying estimates not only have been falling for 2023 quarters as well. And this was a very sort of under-the-water radar story that came out late Friday by Reuters. And along with this disappointing IBIS report, they said that Goldman Sachs recently cut its 2023 S&P 500 earnings per share growth forecast to zero due to weakening profit margins. And as we know, those profit margins have been really the key to the earnings growth over the last few years, because they've been at record highs. So I'm a big follower of M2, and I'm also a big follower of corporate profits, because that, as you mentioned, leads into everything: wages, capital expenditures, dividends, really everything. So I took this as a pretty bad sign.
Boy, that's a very interesting report. Jim LeCamp, what do you make of that?
I mean, you look at earnings expectations for 2023, and you get anywhere from $200 to, I'm just going to make up a number, $250. Now, let's apply a 15 multiple to that, and you're under where we are right now. So it's hard to get bullish about the market. There's only one bullish thing going on with the market right now. Well, there's two. There's three. there's a pessimism that is extraordinarily high. We saw record numbers of on the put call ratio the other day. That's bearish in the very short term. It doesn't really speak to the long term. You have seasonality, which particularly after midterm elections is pretty positive. And finally, you have share buybacks. But beyond that, it's hard to get bullish about anything. I mean, you look at the five Fed surveys and you see a tremendous downturn there. You look at capital expenditure expectations. You see a tremendous downturn there as well. You see layoff plans. They're accelerating. It's really hard. And then the consumer savings rate, which has plummeted and is at very, very low levels. And so it's hard to get to anything but recession. And of course, you dovetail that with the inverted yield curve. It all points to recession. So the only thing that you can do here is maybe tactically trade this market when a pessimism gets too high, as we did in August. You get a rally. And then it disappoints. And so all you can do is tactically trade the market. Beyond that, you're better off buying a three-month treasury, one-year treasury, and getting over 4% and just waiting for things to fall apart, and then you pick up the pieces. And that's where I think investors have to look here.
Well, 4.25, that's an interesting point. 4.25% three-month T-bill is not nothing.
You've seen inflation fall, and the good news here is that the inflation figures are falling and energy prices are finally falling. And I don't know how the Fed thought they were going to cure inflation without headline inflation, which they seem to be really worried about, without energy prices falling. But now they've been falling. I don't know how far they're going to fall. You've got a buyer in the federal government at $80, and you have capital expenditure plans in the energy patch that are still very, very low, and you've got China reopening. So I don't know how far energy prices are going to fall, but they're not going to fix inflation unless they fix energy. But what bothers me, Larry, is the Fed itself. I mean, you've got this jalopy, and the Fed is oversteering on and running us into the ditch when we get too hot. Then they oversteer, and then they're going to run us into the ditch because we're going to be too cold. And they're the big monster in this whole economy. And yeah, they're raising rates, but it takes a while for these rate hikes to work their way into the economy. And they don't wait to see the effect of their actions until they've already raised rates three or four more times. And by then it's too hard to undo. And that's why we have this oversteering issue. Mm-hmm. And I really think the Fed is clueless here. I don't see how in an unprecedented time when we've printed 40% more money than we've ever had over a two-year time frame,
and
we've had record levels of quantitative easing, I don't know how they think in this unprecedented set of moves that they can casually unwind it.
Michael Zanian, the Fed doesn't look at the money supply. I mean, actually, Jay Powell has mocked the money supply. And I just wonder, man, they could be events are, or may already be in case. I mean, they've started their quantitative tightening. All right. We used to call that the monetary base. They're starting to shrink the monetary base. Probably going to do a lot more. What is it? They're still doing $95 billion a month, I think, something like that in runoffs. But if the M2 has meaning, I mean, sometimes, you know, in past decades it hasn't. But in the last few years, it seems to. If it has meaning, Michael Zanin, we're in for a hell of a bad time of it because the crash in M2 is going to crash the whole economy.
Yeah, and how a central bank cannot look at the money supply is beyond me. I also got a long sense that they never really looked at commodity prices either. You know, the Taylor rule or any of that. And that really goes down to the value of the dollar. I mean, all of this purchasing power is the key. And by not looking at the money supply, I mean, we've basically had easy money for so long right now, at least through almost the financial crisis of 2007, 2008. So to Jim's point, you know, this is why it's going to be very, very difficult, and we're going to have some severe pain to unwind easy money for two decades. It's not going to happen, you know, in 3 or 4 or 5 months. It's going to take a while. And again, I go back to contracting M2. Always in the past, when you've had that, you've had downturns in the economy, when you've had severe declines in M2 for a serious period of time. I mean, history doesn't lie. I mean, that's just the way it is. So I think that's starting to be reflected in that core GDP number, which was basically just about zero last quarter. So I think it's already kind of here, and I think it's going to really rear its ugly head in early 2023.
So monetary contraction and profits contraction is a very difficult scenario for the stock market. I don't care how you cut it. Anyway, let's take a break and come back and talk about the implications of this. Jim LeCamp, Senior VP at Morgan Stanley, Mike Ozanian, Assistant Managing Editor of Forbes Media, and co-host of the great Forbes Sports Money Show on Yes Network. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
The Larry Kudlow Show on 77 WABC. This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. We're talking stocks with Jim LeCamp of Morgan Stanley and Mike Ozanian of Forbes Media and Forbes Sports Money on Yes Network. Great show. One thing I don't know if I mentioned it or not, I'm such a space cadet, but the leading index, leading economic indicators put out by the Conference Board has just fallen for the eighth straight month. Just put that out there. I can't remember if I said that or not, but that's another bad sign for the whole story. So, Jim LeCamp, given your pessimism, both you guys are very pessimistic today, not unwarranted, mind you, I'm just saying that you're pessimistic. What does an investor do in this shorter run? Jim, you there? Hello, hello? Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
We seem to have lost the camp. Maybe we'll pick him up. But it's all
and
yours.
I have to apologize. Larry, too. I may be a little pessimistic on that just because the Yankees haven't re-signed Aaron Judge yet. That may be paining me a little bit, but I was just throwing that caveat out there. I'm going to do a little arbitrage. One of the most brilliant people we've had the last several decades, John Malone, chairman of Liberty Media, he announced a few days ago that he's going to the board of Liberty Media has approved changing Liberty Braves, which is the tracking stock for the Atlanta Braves baseball team, and their ballpark and the mixed-use real estate around it, which is like hotels, commercial areas, and so forth, to an asset-backed company. Now, basically, that means it's going to be a regular corporation. I think what that means is that sometime, perhaps by early 2024, he's going to sell the Atlanta Braves and everything. And I think there's an arbitrage play here because if you look at the total value, the enterprise value of the tracking stock, it's just a shade under $2.1 billion. Now, as we know, the Mets a couple of years ago sold for like $2.4 billion. The Braves alone are worth $2.1 billion. So I think it's a great play here. If you go in with the tracking stock, basically by my math, if he does sell the baseball team in 2024, you're basically going to get all that real estate and commercial, those commercial assets for free. I think it's a great, great tracking stock. And I think you could do worse than bet with John Malone as well.
How do you buy it? Is it traded on the exchanges? Tracking stock?
Yeah, you could buy the tracking stock. It's gone up the last 2 days since the announcement. Huh. But still, as of Friday's close, even with that increase, the value of the tracking stock is far below, in my opinion, where the sale of the team and the real estate would go if you were to sell it. So I think it's an interesting arbitrage play. Am I back on? Okay, good.
I think you've returned from the outer spaces. How do you suggest playing this monetary contraction, profits contraction,
Right.
Leading economic indicators down 8 straight months contraction. What do you do here?
Well, if you look at all the averages and you showed the trend line to a sixth grader and you asked them which way those trends were going, all of the major averages, the sixth grader would say, well, they're going down. So they fit. All the markets are failing the sixth grader test, and they'll continue to do so unless they break above the 200-day moving average, which has been stout resistance. So we're playing a very hedged portfolio right now. We're short the dollar. Just because positioning got so heavy in the dollar. And that's kind of what we're doing is we're looking at positioning and kind of going the other way. There was a trade for some of the China shares. But as I said the last time I was on, Larry, bear markets are like Stephen King books, and everybody gets killed in the end. So you can buy defensive areas if you want to, but they're gonna, at the end of the day, they're going to go down too. So I think you have to raise cash and take advantage of higher short-term rates and just wait for things to get cheaper.
By the way, why is the dollar falling?
The positioning got way, way, way too heavy. And then as the economic data started deteriorating, then you saw rates start to come down on the 10-year treasury, et cetera. And so I think when you have over 90% of position traders that were long, it's a good time to go the other way.
Well, you can't kill yourself. I mean, I know everyone's going to lose, but there is such a thing as a longer term. Mike Ozanian, I mean, let me ask you this. We haven't talked about any politics. So the Republicans have taken over the House. They're going to have 222 votes, which is just as good as Pelosi had when she jammed through a lot of very bad legislation. At a minimum, they're going to stop the bad stuff. They might put some pressure on Biden, by the way, for energy security, which is what I'm hoping would happen to change this Green New Deal socialism into something more productive. I mean, maybe that's a bullish indicator. And just in general, the market does like split Congress, right? And you got checks and balances are emerging. Kevin McCarthy will be the new speaker. I mean, that's a plus, isn't it?
Over, if you go through history, the market has performed best under split Congress. Mm-hmm. That's a fact by the data. So even if you get nothing passed, I take that as a somewhat of a bullish sign because basically to me that could mean a lot less spending. I think long term, the best thing that the Republicans can do is they could bring up vote after vote on issues, things that they're for, i.e. tax cuts, marginal tax cuts, i.e. keeping the depreciation rate, i.e. making us energy independent. And you know what? Let the Democrats vote them all down. Mm-hmm. Let that happen. But at least then in 2 years, when we have another presidential election, we can say, we voted for this, we voted for this, we voted for this, and the Democrats voted it down. I believe Bob Dole did something very similar prior to Ronald Reagan's first election. And because this whole thing, what concerns me now on the political side is, I'm getting a sense that the Republicans have come out and said, oh, we're going to start investigating President Joe Biden. I don't think most people give a hoot about that. I think what most people care about is my job, my wages, my purchasing power. What can I buy? And I think they need to hear clear, distinct points from Republicans on specific things they would do that would impact the economy. And if they get voted down, so be it. But it's specific things that they can then point to in 2 years, say, this is what we stand for. This will make your life better. But the Democrats stood in the way.
Yeah,
particularly energy prices, particularly that. That's where low-income people get hit the hardest.
No, that's a good point. Look, I think that H.R. 1 should be an energy security bill, which restarts permitting and pipelining and refining, you know, and production. So that's right. And what Mike Ozanian is saying is very important, which is what you're suggesting, Mike. And by the way, I've talked about this all week on the TV show. The Republicans need a real growth and prosperity agenda. And as you say, if President Biden wants to veto that, he will do so at his and the Democrats' own political risk come 24. That's exactly right. And I might add, 24, the Democrats have to defend two-thirds of their seats. This time around, the Republicans had to defend it in the Senate. It's much better when, you know, if you don't have to defend so many, you'll hold on to them. Anyway, thank you, gentlemen, Jim LaCamp and Mike Ozanian. I appreciate it.